Well, hello, Hoopers. Welcome to the podcast, which is Hula Hoopla, a podcast for Hoopers. I am your hostess, the Hoopanista, Paige. And this week, or this episode, I talked extensively with Anne Humphreys. She came through town to Portland, and we were so blessed to have her. It was very exciting to hang out with her and meet her and get to know her better, and you will definitely get to know her better through this interview. Update on my end, my hoop troupe, the Spinnerettes, we've been performing, been pretty cool. We lucked out and got the honor of photo of the day on March 21st. Thank you, Philo. We had a photographer in the audience that night. We were hooping to set the world record or help celebrate the flaming Dr. Pepper world record bash at the Kenton Station in North Portland, and got a lot of really cool photos from a photographer named Scott Gerke, and his photo made it as photo of the day. So thank you, Scott, and thank you, Philo, and thank you for the folks that turned out there. That was quite the event. We got some fire hooping in on that one as well. Also did a show at the Secret Society, between bands. That was really fun. And also performed in the lobby for a play. And we're hoping to be performing, in May 11th, if it all works out, at halftime at a roller derby bout in Portland. So just fun stuff. And we've got a DJ thing coming up and, you know, so we're trying to get a little more work, get a little money to have some more fun costumes. I've got an idea for some white afros, you know, the silly hooper things that we do and love. And, what else? Let's see. Oh, we also had an amazing photo session with Pete Springer, a Pete Springer photography here in Portland. We are going to be making a video. So looking forward to that. Going to have to do a little more shooting, but, to have a professional photographer do your photos, do it if you can, because it makes a huge difference. We look really good. So thank you, Pete. So yeah, so let's see what else is coming up. Well, how about I just be quiet and let you listen to my interview with Anne Humphreys. She's just amazing. Okay, so we're recording. So we're here at the Produce Row Cafe in Portland, Oregon. I'm with Anne Humphreys. We just finished up her, why don't you explain the workshop?
This was my Infinite Sphere core workshop. So this was a 2-day, which meant that we spent 6 hours, 3 hours each day, exploring the space that's available to dance with, between, among, around, surrounding hooper and hoop. The body and the hoop, all possible combinations within a span of space that I hope to encourage people to better understand and explore more of.
Well, I thought it kicked ass. I'm gonna get this candle.
Oh, totally.
I wanna make sure that
we need candlelight.
We have candlelight. We're actually in an outdoor little lovely area under a heat lamp, so we're good to go.
Huddled together.
Yes. It's like pretending we're at a little bonfire. So for me, the first time I saw you was at the Northwest Hoop Gathering in 2009. Mm-hmm. You were there, right? With Baxter at the time. Mm-hmm. Your workshop was the first one where you guys did the blindfold.
Yeah.
And
well, that was...
Oh, no, you did separate.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. So, okay. Yeah. So I started, my first workshop was with Baxter, uh-huh, with everybody else there. Mm-hmm. And what did you teach when you were in Bend then?
Gosh, what did I teach? I don't remember.
Ah, that's so funny.
No, I do remember that was one workshop. That was one of the first workshops I ever taught, and it got a little bit out of my hands, which can happen when you first start teaching.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that was a huge. That was a lot of people too.
Well, the thing that was really, there were so many amazing and interesting and just inimitable things that happened with learning from Baxter and the way that I got into hooping. But one of the things was is that, you know, I'm coming into the scene as the support and sort of right hand of this guy who really is the most seasoned teacher of this movement practice, period. By a kind of a long shot, in terms of teaching hours, in terms of flight time, if anybody's familiar with the Hoop Path terminology of flight time being the actual time that you've spent interacting with your hoop, or in this case, you know, we can also apply it to other things, that his flight time teaching is so huge in terms of just number of hours. And so because of that, because I'm in this position, the very first time I taught was at Hoop Camp to 90 people. So it was, so I'm like teaching my very first hoop class ever to 90 people. And that was, yeah, as the sun was rapidly setting, and that was, I guess, was that 2 years before? No, it was, that was in 2008. So that was probably the second time at Northwest Hoop Gathering. Oh, yeah, it was probably the second time I had taught. It was also a really huge group.
Huge group. And so it was over 100, I think, at that one.
It was really, I just remember this feeling of this is getting away from me. This is really getting away from me. And I was trying to rein it in, but, you know, I've had a lot of flight times between then and now. So this weekend's workshop was marvelous, and the Portland Hoopers are just so inspiring, so really just were ready to try new movements,
excited to find out you were coming. You had a really neat story. We were talking about Portland yesterday, about the first time you came to Portland. And I think you were just starting the Hoop Path teaching, the traveling.
So the backstory for that was, so when I met Baxter, when I met Baxter and got involved in hooping seriously, which was in the summer of 2006, it was not a long time before I thought to say to him, you know, I think that you should just do more teaching, because at that time he was teaching two weekly classes in North Carolina in Carrboro, and he had saved up a bunch of money from bartending and was planning to move to Los Angeles and try to maybe get work in movies or commercials. And I said, you know, I think you should take this money you've saved and make a DVD and get a website going. And then when that all started taking shape, Jasmine Patton of HoopClothes.com and Dervish.com.
Which I'm wearing. Pants.
Well, I have this jacket, which I haven't taken off one time.
Fantastic jacket, Patton.
I've been sleeping in this jacket still, Jasmine.
Thank you, Jasmine.
I told her
for making all the Hoopers look beautiful.
I love these clothes. And so Jasmine, we had camped with her at Burning Man. Backtrack. We had not camped with her yet. We camped with her. I hadn't met Jasmine yet. That's right. So Jasmine invited Bax to come out and teach in Portland. And Carrie Revolva, at the same time, invited him to come to Eugene and teach. So this all really dovetailed because, you know, this was when we had been, were brainstorming around the clock about the website and the DVD and really expanding what he was doing in Carrboro outward. And so Jasmine and Revolva, still very dear friends of ours, were instrumental in making that happen initially. And we came right here to Portland. And then what was so hilarious, I didn't even tell you this part, which was wild. We went out to dinner with Jasmine and Christabel and Jasmine's boyfriend at the time. And we're sitting around the table and it was like, oh yeah, you know, and I can't even remember what Jasmine had told us about her boyfriend, but the more we talked to him, the more we were like, this guy's, he's just like us. And it was Carlos of Nia.
Oh. I did not know that. Oh my God.
One of the founders of Nia Movement, which is also a kind of a dance meditation, yeah. which was also, and this was, you know, Baxter felt like, you know, he had met his mentor, his first mentor. He really did. Because it was a man who was holding space for meditative dance, and Carlos had also been specifically inspired by a feminine spirit in Nia. I don't know if, I mean, I know very little about it, but I do know that there was a feminine spirit at the heart of it, which was such a close parallel to the Maidan, the mythical mm-hmm. original Hoopers in Baxter's personal myth of origin for hooping, which was one of the things that when I went to my first class in 2005 really just hit me in the heart so hard, was this myth about the original Hoopers being this tribe of women. And so when we met Carlos, I mean, we're at the table talking, you know, the deeper this conversation gets, it's like we're, you know, tearing up, you know, and just found family and in here in Portland right away in March of 2007. And we had an amazing workshop that weekend at the Nia Studio with Christabel
which is
and
a
Candace.
Fantastic studio.
So beautiful.
I miss
Katie Surprise was there, who's now in D.C. She was in the Bay Area. She came up from the Bay. And Revolva, I think, came up from Eugene for that workshop as well. And then we went to Eugene after Portland. Oh, God. And Holly and Kara, all the Whirly Girls, all the Portland Whirly Girls were there. I wonder what if Meg... No, Meg's was not out here yet. Meg's was still in Virginia. But it was... I have so many photographs from that workshop. Beautiful photos.
I would love... are they posted? Are you...
They're on Tribe. But I have... They're on Tribe, but I have all of them on my computer, actually.
That
totally
would be kind of fun to like put that back up there.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Just the whole lineage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what else were we talking about? We've just been listening.
Yeah.
Just like we've been just talking and talking and talking this whole weekend, and I've just totally loved it. Mm-hmm. So tell me, you have been on the road since July of mm-hmm. 2011. Mm-hmm. What have you been doing on the road?
Well, when I first, Baxter and I worked together as a team for we were a couple together for 3.5 years. So we were together around the clock, geeking out about hooping constantly. And I'm not even exaggerating.
Oh, no. Slightly. I explain to people. It's like, it's like total geekery. It's like, it's awesome.
So it was 24/7 hooping, hoop path, and then traveling and teaching for 3.5 years. And then we separated as a couple, and I was hanging out in North Carolina and still taking class with him and still working with him in the hoop path in a sort of a, as time went on, I had more of an independent contractor kind of role rather than what I had been more of a right-hand woman.
Yeah.
And then I decided about 6 months after we broke up that I was going to relocate to Brooklyn, because I had an opportunity to take a sublet there and rent out my house in North Carolina. And so I went up there with my dog and lived in Bed-Stuy in an awesome apartment and taught classes at the Brooklyn Lyceum every week.
I sent a woman to you.
Oh, really?
I met her in Mexico, gave her one of my hoops.
Oh.
And she lives in Brooklyn. And I said, I think Anne teaches you. And I think she took a class.
Sweet.
I think her name was Teresa or Margaret. I can't remember. Anyway.
Or Catherine.
Anyway. So you're in Brooklyn.
So I was in Brooklyn for a year teaching weekly classes at the Lyceum. And then we started up the Meditation Hoop Jam, the Meditation Jam at the Lyceum every month, the first Sunday of every month, which is still going on. And some of my students and colleagues are continuing that on in Brooklyn, which is wonderful. But after being in Brooklyn for a year teaching hooping and then traveling to teach workshops on the weekends, it was too expensive and just hard to continually leave the dog with a dog sitter and fly. I just am not feeling flying these days for so many reasons. I mean, and we've been talking about also some of the decisions that, you know, decisions about resource, how we're managing our resources, that the flow community and the hoop community has really inspired me to think about my decisions in that regard and my impact. And so throughout that year, I was like, you know, gosh, I mean, I love teaching and I love communing with Hoopers, but to have to fly and to always be leaving my dog, who is very attached to me. He's that kind of a dog. You know, he's got a number one person.
Such a sweetie.
He's really cute. But you know, he does have this number one person in his life. And so, you know, if I'm constantly shifting, it's, you know,
stressful for him. Yeah.
So then I thought, well, what if I just let go of this sublet in Brooklyn? I was also realizing that because I was seeing more and more that being an entity independent of Baxter was more and more sort of inevitable as I worked more on my own. And I thought, well, if that's the case, then I definitely need to tour on my own and demonstrate the fact that I am teaching different material that's been, you know, inspired so much by the Hoop Path, but still has its own thing going on. And I thought, well, I really probably need to tour pretty hard right now. And I thought, well, why don't I just, you know, hit the road again? Because I love New York. I mean, New York was my first second home. I have many second homes, but it was my first when I was 12 years old. I visited New York and was homesick for it when I came back to North Carolina. Totally true. But it was just so hard to spend the whole year round there, winter, schlepping hoops from Bed-Stuy over to Gowanus.
And you didn't do that via car, right?
I did. I had a car, thank God, and I had a parking space in my wonderful apartment where I lived.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, this apartment. So that story, actually, so the way that I'm living now is, you know, I'm moving from place to place. I spent a couple of months in Austin. Well, let me just backtrack. Okay, so I left Brooklyn in July of 2011, left my dog with a friend, and went to Europe and went to the European Juggling Convention for the first time, which was amazing. And, you know, connected to that deep tradition of juggling in Europe, and was so inspired to witness that scene. And then I spent some time in Finland, spent some time in Bristol with those fabulous Hoopers, Bags and Emma and Gail. And then I went to the European Hoop Convention, and I also went to Prague. My brother was in Prague playing music. Actually, my brother's a musician. And then I also spent a lot of time in Berlin, which is any flow artist, Hooper, spinner. I mean, if you can spend time in Berlin, it is just the place. It's just the place for the arts.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, right now. I mean, there's this place called the Catacombs, the Catacomben in German. And it's a gym. It's like a jugglers, spinners, movement artists gym that's really near this beautiful park. And so I'm in Berlin after the EJC, after the European Juggling Convention, and Spiral was there, and Sapphire, and Revolva, and Gail, and Emma, and Brecken.
Oh.
And yeah, it was really, really wonderful. And Becca Hoop, who is now in Berlin. And, oh no, you know, she was actually, did she ever make it to the EJC? Well, this is a ridiculous aside. There were many spinner friends at the EJC and in Berlin afterwards. So there was like this group of us that was at the EJC, and then we went to Berlin and we're hanging out with these folks from the Catacomben and having these spin jams in this park all day, every day. Because every day that there was good weather, which was many days because it was August, you would just go up to this park and people would be juggling under this tree, and, you know, it was just, you know, contact jugglers and wand and clubs. I mean, everything. Oh, and Kyle was there from the Vulcan. It was just like all these spinners and Brian from Vulcan. It was, no, wait, Kyle was there. But anyway, so I was in Europe, and then I went to back through New York and then to Burning Man and then came back to North Carolina, picked up my dog, and then started this road journey. And I went to Austin and spent 2 months in Austin, which is an amazing flow community. So much exciting stuff happening there. Laura Scarborough, who is the maven.
I don't know why I didn't know that she was in Austin.
She's just a brilliantly talented woman. She's plays keys, she sings, she writes songs, she loops music. I mean, she's a maestro. She's a maestro as a musician. And then as a hooper, she's a beautiful hoop dancer. She's been hooping for many years and has just deep, deep, deep roots as a mover. And she has innovated mag hoops, which are the hoops with the magnets, very strong magnets inside, and they're in different combinations of 2 and 3 and sometimes 4.
Saw those at a hoop camp this year.
Mm-hmm. Laura is, so that all comes through Laura Scarborough. And so she's in Austin, so I got some really special time with her. And then also there's a duo called Art Theism.
Nice.
Yes. And this is a hooper named Topher Sipes, who's an artist, also a visual artist, and his partner Sam Beasley, who's a dancer, a trained modern dancer. And they create pieces where Sam is dancing, and Topher's light drawing is live light drawing being projected onto her. And he's got a system now where he can just draw with all 10 fingers.
Oh my God.
On an iPad. It's amazing. I'm hoping that they'll be at Hoop Camp. I know that they were in the mix for Hoop Camp, and so I'm really hoping that they'll be there so everybody can see this. Because then when Brecken, and I was there when Brecken came through town and taught, I taught some workshops before Christmas, then she came after Christmas, and oh my God, we got 80s going on here. 80s
I know.
Music. 70s, 80s is just where it's at. So when Brecken came through, we hung out with Topher and Sam several times. They hung out, the three of them hung out all day, choreographed a piece. Then I came over at night, they performed the piece, taped it. It was really amazing. We were at Kim Itzy's house, who's a Henna Kim, who is another old school hooper. She's been hooping for 14 years. She hoops with nothing but big hoops. And she's been many people's hoop mama. And then also my friend Michelle Amaranth has Hoop Church. She's come to the Hoop Path Retreat in North Carolina many years. And so she has Hoop Church every Sunday. and then my friend Katarina Sutton, who is the nose hooper, if anybody's ever seen.
I think I have.
So Katarina is in Austin. And then Tom Thumb, who is the great clown, our friend, hat trick, contact juggler, poi boy, and more, magic man, Tom Thumb. He came to town, and then the three of us did this. Did you see our video, our spoof on nose hooping? You gotta check it out.
No, I'll have to check it out.
This will be, I don't know if you can.
I can add a link.
Yeah, add a link, because we had so much fun creating this thing. Because we were just having breakfast at Kirby Lane Cafe, which is, you know, Austin, like 24-hour place, and we were just talking about the nose hooping, and somehow we started talking about this is the fourth eye. and then we just turned it into, you know, Katarina's our guru, and Tom and I have now been, you know, subsumed into this nooping cult, which
nooping.
Are three people.
I was wondering what the hell. I've seen that. I'm like, what the fuck is nooping? Okay, now I know. Okay.
Yes.
It's your fault.
It's all in your nose, honey. That's what we learned. We learned all together. So Austin was just amazing. And we had World Hoop Day there. Laura organized the World Hoop Day. Oh, and Sierra Blossom is there. She performs with Katarina. And her husband, Happy Happy James, is the best hooping DJ ever. Anybody who's doing a hooping event, if you want to bring in a DJ who knows how to spin for hoopers, Happy Happy James from Austin, Texas.
Well, his name alone is pretty fantastic.
Exactly. I mean, it's such a crew down there. I love those guys. I really... And then Jaguar Mary, who does a lot of the online hooping tutorials and who organizes the Sacred Circularities Retreat in Bali, which I'm about to go teach at again.
Oh. Someday.
Yes. And it's happening next year. And it's happening in Sedona in December, in Sedona, Arizona. And then it's happening in Bali next April. And I'm also teaching next April. And I think Baxter might be too.
Right on.
Next, but I don't know. I mean, he might be teaching in Sedona. I can't remember all the things. Sorry if I just told a lie. But Jaguar Mary came and met me in Austin, and then we went through Sedona so she could check out this venue for Sacred Circularities, and had an amazing experience in Sedona together. And she and I are collaborating to do these online classes for my new website.
Oh, cool. And so I really like her.
Oh, she is just like my artistic partner. I mean, we just found each other and we have these conversations about art. She was a performance artist and visual artist, you know, and has this history in New York and DC. And so we have so much. She did an MFA also. I did an MFA. I did an MFA in creative writing. She did an MFA in filmmaking. And so we just brainstorm like crazy. I mean, we're just in the car driving from Texas to California.
Oh,
you know,
right
just
on.
Brainstorming about all these things. I mean,
I can't even imagine that conversation. I just keep checking to make sure that my battery is still
good. Oh, yeah,
good.
Totally, totally. So that was wonderful. That was an amazing part of the journey. Then we landed up in L.A., I taught in L.A. That was wonderful. I worked with Fire Groove.
Love them.
Yes. And they were, you know, part of the OG L.A. hoop crew. The family business, Lester and Heather and, Kamala, Lester and Hannah. Two sisters and a brother.
I think they told me they're originally from Oregon.
Yes, they are from Oregon. And they all went down to L.A., I think at various times. I don't think they all came down at the same time. I think they have one more brother too. But it's just so sweet to see these people thriving over time, you know, who really were so instrumental in setting the first rhythm, you know, of hooping and flow arts out to the world. And so much of it, of course, emanated from L.A. That's the next chapter. But L.A. was also where Burning Dan was, who was like my connection into that there were people doing movement meditation with other tools. Because
uh-huh.
Oh. He was a poi spinner. He was out of L.A. And just being there. And I was in Venice Beach, which was the flow temple. Was where that was his company and entity, and it was just really, really special to be there. I was there for 2.5 weeks, and Jaguar Mary went out. She came up to Northern California, and then what else happened? Oh, then I came up to Berkeley and stayed at the Flow Space. So that was super special because, okay, so the first time I went to Fire Drums, I met Burning Dan, and he just made such a deep impression on me in so many ways, for so many reasons, too numerous to go into now. But again, it was like this connection to, oh gosh, you know, there's people in other parts of the flow world who are really feeling that, you know, what we feel with the hoop, that, you know, you can go deep inside and just really allow movement to be expressed throughout your whole body, and that you can use that movement of the object as a focus point and a mantra. And when I went up to Berkeley, I was staying, so at the Flow Space, this is the artist's kind of residency space and it's a studio that it also houses Flow Toys, which is a company that makes glow flow props.
Oh, okay.
Yes, not hoops, but actually all kinds of poi and staffs, wands and stuff. And many friends, other spinner friends work there, live there, Spiral lived there. But, and then it's a guy named Sean Von Stade and his wife Prisna, and they have a little baby. And so they were, you know, this is their space and their project of having these artist residencies.
That's so cool.
For flow artists. And they have a seed fund, Fund the Flow Arts. And this is also connected to what Khan Wong is doing, the Flow Show, which Baxter and I participated in the first one many years ago. Khan works in collaboration with Sean and Prisna to kind of elevate the visibility of the flow arts and the comprehension of the flow arts and what it is, and that it is movement art for performance and for personal practice. And so it was really special to stay there and get to know them, get to know Shauna Prison a little bit, because, you know, Khan and I have been buds ever since the days of Tribe.net. But it was really funny because I was there and it was a work train, so I was cleaning the space, the studio space. I was looking at there was this kind of shelf area, and it was like, I hadn't really thought about it. I was just kind of dusting off this shelf. It was like a big old shelf on one side of the studio. And I'm like dusting it off, and then I look up and there's this portrait staring back at me, and I'm looking at it and I'm like, that is just such a beautiful face. And then as I look at it, I'm like, that's Dan. It was Bernie Dan, who we lost about a year and a half ago. And so I'm going like, wow, aww. You know, because I was just thinking about him because I had been in Venice and I was reflecting on it. It was a pain in my heart that, you know, we hadn't been able to collaborate more. And because he was also close with Jack Romeri and Tom Thumb, and, you know, we're like going through and it's like, oh, we're all missing Dan, you know, like, I wish he was here. And then he was like there right in there. The flow space and just helping to really inspire these conversations about, like we were having at dinner tonight, about what are the flow arts, what are we doing, what's it all about? And Shauna and Prisna have really inspired me by making manifest so many of these things. Like, they have their business going, and now they have opportunities to, they have funded a few different flow arts projects, which I can't name them out of just pure memory, but they're really making concrete efforts to advance the form, uh-huh. you know, and support people like me and people like you. And I mean, you should apply for a Fund the Flow Arts, because that's, having a podcast about hoop
about
dance,
us, about
yeah,
this whole
really,
movement.
It's a part of
and...
that. Forgive me if I'm talking too much or straying too much from the topic.
No, this is awesome.
But this is what my journey was really about, was, you know, it's like the deeper that I go in the, oh God, I forgot an important thing about LA. Duh, I can't, I'll return to that. But the longer I'm in the, I know it's like, I'm embarrassed, but you'll understand why in a moment. The deeper I go, it's like, I keep encountering, the old and the new, you know, like faces that I've seen before, but also new ideas bubbling up and people growing what they're doing, and then not seeing somebody for 6 months or a year and then reconnecting and talking about what we've been doing and just light bulbs and crazy, you know, it's like with Tom and me, you know, because we had hung out in the Maine, the Hoop Fest in Maine, which is a really fun event too.
Yes, I want to go.
Oh, that event is like so chill. That's what the real advantage of the Maine Hoop Fest, because, you know, when you think about some of the other events and like the, blah, you know, crazy, but the Maine Hoop Fest was just, it's because it's kind of tucked away, just so chill. But that was the only time that we had really gotten to hang out. So this time in Austin, we just spent a lot more time geeking out and playing. Oh, but I was going to say, I totally skipped the chapter about the Basement Jacks video, which was also happening when I was in L.A. So The Hooping Life, which is the documentary that has been made by Amy Goldstein, which is now being screened in many different cities.
We're hoping to bring it here,
oh,
too.
Awesome.
Kind of falling behind on that one, but...
Well, you know, it's still turning around. I mean, there's plenty of cities where it needs to be seen.
It needs to be here.
And that's, so that's a documentary that features some of the real pivotal moments in the early days of hooping in the mid 2000s. And Anna Hoopalicious is, the primary character, and then Christabel and Baxter and, the New York Hoopers, the Groove Hoopers, as well as, a woman named Tisha, who's awesome. And a guy named Carice, who is amazing, who's a gender-bending performer, just amazing guy. Anyway, so that's the Hooping Life. Amy and her partner Anushka are making, they have commissioned, they have somehow ended up with the Basement Jacks wanted to do a song for the movie, which is something that they had really been hoping to make happen for a while, to have a song composed specifically for the movie.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. And so they did that. They created this track that's all about hooping and the revolution. It's pretty awesome. Yeah. I was like, yeah, this track bumps. It's awesome. So they are making the music video, and Malcolm Stewart from Groove Hoops and Becca Hoop from originally from Canada and now in Berlin. And they worked with all the styling and the choreography of the video. And then a bunch of us came through and played different roles in the video, including Beth Lavender and Jaguar Mary and Khan. And, oh my God, who else came through? Oh, I mean, I'm sure Hoopalicious and Momalicious are featured. And Luna Breeze was there when I was there. And Revolva. Nick and Kit. God, who else did I see? Well, Tisha from the movie. But there are lots of Hoopers that are coming through to be in this music video. So they're working on it right now, and it should be.
I think I saw something posted about that. It's yeah, like, do you want to be involved? And
there was a call for Hoopers to come out and be involved in choreography. And I mean, you know, I think a lot of folks ended up going out there, because I mean, there were people in and out all the time. You know, I was staying up the street, so I would just drop in and be like, what's up? You know, it was really fun. But we had such a blast hanging out this few days, and I got to spend some time with Luna Breeze and Philo from Hooping.org, and we went to see Pina, the movie about the German choreographer who died within the last 2 years, and she's just an incredible choreographer. And yeah, LA was just amazing. And then Berkeley was amazing with the Flow Space, and I got to hang out with Spiral. I got to meet Raina for the very first time. I went to Raina and Anna's Hoop Jam. And I had never met Raina, just through sheer chance. You know, we've just never been in the same place at the same time. So
right.
We were just like, oh. And then I went and taught Mount Shasta, and Raina's niece came to my class, which was so awesome.
Cool.
Yes, and then your friend Kathleen.
Hi, Kathleen.
She was so wonderful. Oh, Kathleen and Alan. And they were just such wonderful hosts. And Mount Shasta is just a dream.
I am so proud of what she's doing there. Because that's
really,
she just like, hey, we need hoop classes. We need, she just made it happen.
Yes, she's digging in. Yeah, and it's very inspiring. It's very inspiring.
It's beautiful there, too. Like, I'm like, you guys want to adopt
me?
The
mountain, oh my gosh. The mountain is breathtaking.
It's like, right there.
And then, then I went from there to Ashland and saw Jasmine.
Was, Serena?
No,
she was traveling. She's in Hawaii now, right?
She was in Hawaii. I think now she's in Costa Rica.
Oh, Costa Rica. That's right.
Lots of people are in Costa Rica right now for the Envision Festival.
And some people are down in Panama right now, too. I saw some pictures
really?
This morning. Down there in Boquete.
Oh, okay.
It's like, oh, my God. It just...
Wow. It's like, maybe it's sort of post-Envision people.
Maybe.
Probably. And then I went through Ashland, reconnected with Jazzy, which is so wonderful, and then came up here to Portland, and now I'm here.
Yay.
I don't know if that was too much
That's
detail.
That's a fantastic year. That's an amazing, incredible year. And then next is Bend.
And then I'm going to Bend.
And then to Denver.
To Boulder.
Boulder.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited about that. And then I'll head through Kansas, but I don't think I'm going to teach in Kansas this time because I really need to launch the website, and I want to do it before I go to Bali. And I'll be heading back east, but I'll stop through and see my best friend and see Luna Breeze and check in with my Hoopers there, Ziggy and Circa. And then I teach in St. Louis.
Nice.
So, and that'll be my first time in St. Louis. And this Hooper, Michelle Schaefer, she just made it happen. You know, people that are proactive get the Hoopers to, you know, people to come teach. Because when you're, especially because now that so many of us are traveling, you really get spread thin, and it gets, because a lot of us are just one woman shows,
right,
or one man shows. We don't have admin. We don't have, you know, support staff in many cases, in most cases, in almost all cases. It can be really hard to keep up with the volume of emails, just, and also, yeah. you know, you want to keep up with friends and you want to participate in some of the online community stuff. But so I'm just saying this as a kind of, you know, friendly advice to people who want Hoopers to come teach, that if you can take the lead and really be persistent in and organized and, you know, understand that you have this many Hoopers in your town who are committed to doing a workshop, and you have a space that's this size and it has a music system or not, just that you have a, if you have a handle on what's going on,
right.
you can totally, I mean, Hoopers will come to you and teach, absolutely. But the more persistent you are, the more it pays off.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know.
Well, thank you for Christy Taylor for doing that for us with
yes.
you. We're
Amen
very excited because she's like, well, you guys, what do you think about having Ancom? We're like, oh my God, how do we make it happen? So we made it
and
happen.
She was very much like, yeah, let's do it. You know, here, I'll find you a space. What, you know, what weekends are you available? Okay, let's do that one. And, you know, if you leave too much up to the hoop teacher,
it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
That's overwhelming.
Yes.
So, for instance, what's a minimum amount of students do you need before?
For me, because my costs are low, because I'm renting out my house and I'm in my car, I can make these little stops. You know, I can stop in Shasta and, you know, have a small class.
That's so nice.
Weeknight
but you're right. Like, not everyone can do that.
Yes, but for people who are flying out and coming on the weekends, a lot of times you want to have a venue that can hold 15 or 20 Hoopers. So 1,500 square feet to 2,000 square feet is, I would say that's probably going to be a minimum. Because
yeah.
if somebody's flying out, they're going to have to pay, you know, $350.
And if they don't have a place
for
to stay.
And then they might have to pay for a hotel. And they might have to pay for a rental car. So, you know, and also the more that you can provide as a point person,
right.
as a host, to help people, you know, so they don't have to rent a car. They don't have to stay in a hotel. That can also, for those of you who want to, who live in maybe smaller cities, you can offer, you know, you can offset maybe, if, you know, if you can't turn out 30 or 40 Hoopers, if you can only turn out 15 or 20, then you can, you know, offer a crash pad, offer a chauffeur, kind of,
yeah.
I mean, you know, not a real chauffeur, but
right,
drive people around.
But this is good to know. This is going to help people, you know,
yes.
bring more Hoopers out. And
yes. And get more people in workshops, because the teaching experience is, the learning experience, you know, I became a teacher because I loved being a student. And I never would have gotten into hooping without Baxter. There's just no way. I cannot even imagine. I was not about, as I was saying to AT or somebody in here, I was just saying, you know, I was not about to spend a couple of years just seeing what I could do with a hula hoop. I was not about to do that, you know. So I've always had so much respect and gratitude for the teacher-student dynamic, because I benefited from it so much. And
do you find like the hooping or the flow arts to be unique in that aspect, as far as I don't know, I guess for me, maybe I haven't taken enough of other flow arts classes, but to me, hooping has been such a unique experience. And like, say you'd taken an art class or a photography class or something like that, because there's the on, I guess everything has its own community. If you connect with it or not, that's kind of up to you.
I will comment on this, actually, because I do, I have a lot of ideas about all things, actually, I'm just being honest, but especially about hooping and flow art, because it's changed me so much. I endlessly reflect on it and why, you know, why. And I think the fact of the matter is that the flow arts, but hooping in particular, and I'll expound on that in a moment, but moving with an object tends to, if anybody that starts doing it, most people sooner or later end up stumbling into some kind of meditative state, whether they intended to or not. And hooping in particular, especially hooping with big hoops at the beginning, for a lot of people, can really induce that state, simply because if you can get lost in the circle of a big hoop, in that big embrace and supported in your exploration of space, and also just spinning itself, which we know from the Sufis, and even from being children, that there's a special place that you go to.
You spin and spin and spin.
Inside, there's a stillness. It's the eye of the storm. And to me, you know, now I know all these are the same thing, because, you know, it's the matrix of creation and destruction. That's what it is. You know, it organizes around that center, and that center is stillness and the coming together of the extremes and the opposites in all things. Now that I just leapt into the realm of philosophy. But I do really believe this, because it was, you know, it's like I encounter Baxter. I haven't seen anything like this in my life. My mind is blown. And of course, he had so much insight into the experience, because he's very introspective and is just a very bright and awake person, and was paying attention and started, you know, was really trying to understand what was happening to him as this started to befall him. But so I'm thinking, you know, at first I'm like, this guy, like, you know, just downloaded all this stuff through this magic circle, you know. But then as we go on, and the more, as we travel and as I meet more Hoopers, and then I start to realize, like, oh my gosh, so many people just spontaneously fall into that space. And the hoop, I think, because it contains the whole body and involves the whole body in the spin, whereas a lot of the, you know, the other flow arts might not, you know, you have an opportunity not to engage the whole body. I mean, you can spin, you can definitely spin poi while standing very still. And you know, in the circus tradition, with a juggler, for example, or, you know, a traditional circus hooper, they're taught to stand stock still and not to fall into that place. But that's why the whole thing of playing, why so many, I think, of the flow artists and hoopers really talk a lot about playing, because that is what you rediscover when you kind of abandon yourself to that force.
It's really powerful. I've been in classes where people have cried.
Oh yeah.
It was really amazing.
Oh yeah. I mean, I have to say, while we're on the subject of crying, and I do want to say this, I do want to bear witness to this, because I do think one of my things that became clearer and clearer to me over the years, and then especially after I left my home in North Carolina and was all alone up in New York and continuing my movement practice, and just, you know, taking my movement space, whether it was with or without my hoop, because I do a lot of movement without the hoop now, but it was always a time and a space for whatever needed to be felt, you know, where feelings would just come forward. And I started to really understand the movement meditation as this practice of allowing the body to feel what it needs to feel. And that, then it, you
know. Sometimes that's really scary.
Yes. And yeah, and it was. And the thing was, is that it was, it's just flat embarrassing how many times I just end up crying, you know, because it's like, you think, well, how can I possibly, you know, that nothing's going wrong. I mean, we have all these, like, ideas about what we should be feeling that we want to put on top of what we are feeling. But now that I regularly make that space in my life for sitting, not sitting, moving ultimately, but I start with stillness. I always start with stillness. And allow.
I really love that about the class.
Thank you. And I teach it because this is what I've been doing, and this is what has been keeping me sane. You know, quite honestly, is that, you know, allowing whatever feelings are waiting. They're waiting to be felt, and they will be felt. They will force their way through. If you stuff them down for years, they will force their way through in some way that may or may not be safe for you. And that is something that I feel like I've also really learned through the flow practice, is just to allow. It's like any feeling can be felt. Any feeling can be felt. And because what happens is the feelings come up and we want to act on them. We want to say something to somebody or do something. But then when you have that time and space set aside to dance or to move, and just allow that feeling to be felt physically in the body. That's also what I felt like about core hooping, was that as my core got stronger and stronger, I felt like I could contain my feelings more. I could, but at the same time, it wasn't like a steel container. It was a fluid container that could allow, they could roll through. My core was strong, but it was also so yielding and flexible. And so that all the feelings, you know, I could just let all feelings come up, including joy, tears of joy, you know, like how it's so often inappropriate, you know, to let that come to the surface.
Isn't that sad?
It's so sad, but that's again, I mean, I swear to God, I mean, I feel, I mean, I almost have a crusader-y attitude about, you know, we have a right to dance. We have a right to express ourselves in ways that are not harmful to other people. And so often enough, so I set aside this time for myself. If I feel like being in privacy, I'm in privacy. And if I feel like sharing whatever is coming out of me at that moment, I will go to a public park. I don't perform, I don't choreograph, I don't do routines, just because that's not something that, as I was describing to you when I was like a walking sculpture or a hooping sculpture or whatever.
Yeah.
at the Alamance County, whatever, you know, arts fundraiser. But I love to be a part of public spaces, which was also something that was very influenced by my involvement in Occupy. I was understanding that public spaces are there for us, it was so wonderful to see hoopers and to bring my hoop to Zuccotti Park and to feel like this is, you know, this belongs here. This is, you know, this is a part of what we're trying to say, that our humanity can be, when it can be expressed in such a way that is doing no harm, then why the hell not? I mean, why? I mean, so many people are embarrassed of dancing, and it's like a shackle around your soul.
Well, I found that last night. We were dancing like crazy, just jumping up and down and flailing, and there was probably four of us.
Uh-huh.
And we kept trying to drag other people out, and they would just sit back, and someone said, oh, they must think we're fools. And I said, I think they're very envious that they aren't flailing around with us.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's another wonderful thing about the hoop, and the big hoop in particular, and another wonderful thing about Baxter, because I think men in particular have so much less permission to dance. And I think we all see that and feel that and know that, and men just have so far fewer opportunities to just express themselves,
even
dance or not. And so it was so wonderful to come into hooping that way, and with a
male.
Yes, exactly.
A strong, very powerful.
And the very first time I saw hoop dance, I saw Baxter hooping in the middle of the lawn at the co-op market in Carrboro by himself. And my mind was blown, because it was like, hot guy dancing in public, hula hoop. These three things don't go together at all, but they're all together suddenly right now in this soul dance somehow. You know, it was too weird. It was incomprehensible. Totally incomprehensible. But what's so wonderful, though, about having hoops coming into more and more communities is that it does give people that. I mean, so many people have said this, but, you know, it gives people permission to dance. And I am doing more and more dancing without the hoop. I did a video of dancing without the hoop. I don't know if you saw that, but I was trying to kind of dip my toe into the dance beyond the hoop.
Well, what's really cool, after we get done with the interview, yeah, I want to talk about, like, get all these links.
Because I
do a complimentary, I do a write-up on a blog, and I have
Absolutely.
All the links and sometimes videos and stuff that go associated with the podcast. So we'll, for the listeners, we'll have all that information on the blog to share, the videos we've been talking about and all the people we've been talking about. I love sending people to, like, the websites and everything, just to keep to perpetuate this amazing community we're part of.
Yes. Yeah. It is so amazing and so... I, it's always been inspiring, but what I'm really inspired by right now is how people are hanging in there with it and really making new things happen. That's why I went to all these pains to describe, you know, all the things that I saw along the first big leg of my tour, because
that's huge. I mean, yeah. That's like, in that short span of time, that is, mm-hmm. you know, what's the equivalent to like 500 hoop camps?
You know what I mean? All the stuff's happening all the time. That's what's so exciting, is everybody's doing more stuff. Everybody's doing more stuff all the time.
Well, I like that there are more and more collaborations, crossover,
exactly. I was just thinking about
cross-pollination.
That, yeah.
You know, I love that.
And the flow community is just coming together more and more. And so one of the things that Jaguar Mary and I are constantly brainstorming about is just like a flow summit that has... there's Florida Flow Fest, which I'm teaching at this year, which I went to last year with Jaguar Mary, and which I'm teaching at this upcoming next November, which is going to be awesome, which is a flow conference, and you know, in other words, not just hooping,
right,
where there's poi and there's staff and other kinds of dance. But I think, well, she and I, we're interested in some of these, all this conceptual stuff, and the cooperative business stuff, and having panels, and you know, kind of maybe more like a little more like a conventional convention, so to speak. but not, you know, we can't be in a hotel, you know, we can't be sitting
right.
in one of those rooms with these horrible tables and plastic glasses of water. So that's one of the things we brainstorm about, like how could we have a conference where it was a flow, where it could contain all the flow arts and have space for movement and have these opportunities for roundtable discussions, panels, lectures, maybe just because there's so much to understand and share. And especially about some of this cooperative business stuff and new, because we all just feel one another in such a real way, and we do love each other and we do have the deepest friendships, it's inspired us to practice business in a new way that is not, you know, the old model.
Right.
Of, this belongs to me and I'm trademarking this, and you know, even though that's not everybody's choice, but it's exciting that so many people, it's like Burning Man. This is the thing, it just reminds me of my first burn, which was in 2007, and I camped with Christabel and Heather Hooper Power from Chicago and Heather Troy from Hoop Camp. And after I came back, I remember the thing that the main thing that I had learned was that people are just waiting for an opportunity to give because of the gift economy at Burning Man, you know, the total suspension of commercial economy, and of you give me something, I give you something back, and that everything being a gift. And it was like for the first time in life I realized that people want to give. I mean, of course I knew that at some level before, but it was like, okay, when you create an opportunity, a model for people to practice this, for people, you know, to give from their heart whatever they're inspired to give, it happens. You can't, you know, it's uncontainable.
It's almost like people almost feel like they need the permission to be able, like they don't know what they have,
mm-hmm.
what do I have to give? And it's like when they're surrounded by,
yes,
and it's giant gestures to like tiny little a hug.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh wait, I have so many things I can give, and you know.
And to feel safe to give, that, you know, there's not going to be, there's not going to be this expectation.
Right. That's like a pure form.
Yeah.
There's no strings attached.
Yeah. It really was utterly life-changing, as everything hooping related has been for me. But that's what I think about now as so many of us are coming together and trying to further this conversation about how do we practice business differently, because we do all understand that we're on the same page and we're trying to bring the joy that we have found to other people. And it's so exciting. It's so exciting to be involved in this movement. It really is.
I can't remember. I can't place the person that told me this. It may have been Christabel. It may have been my friend Lacey. That there's abundance. Mm-hmm. There's abundance in what we receive, what we can give. Mm-hmm. And it's, don't worry about the competition. It's the abundance. There's mm-hmm. enough for everybody.
Well, yeah. And the thing, well, this reminds me of a TED Talk. This is my favorite TED Talk. We can link to this too, because it's just sublime. I was so inspired by this guy, Benjamin Zander, who, he teaches, he's a pianist. He's a, he's a British guy and teaches piano. And he gave a talk on classical music. Like, he starts it out talking about how few people actually listen to classical music. You know, like, he says something like, you know, maybe 20% of people, like, yeah, when you come home from work on a Friday and maybe pour a Zinfandel or something. Yeah, you know, a little, what does he say? Something like, a little Vivaldi never hurts, doesn't hurt, you know, a little Vivaldi in the background. And then he talks about, and then there's like this much bigger group of people who never tune in to the, you know, 89.3 or, you know, whatever it is. And then there's this tiny group of people that are just all about classical music. And he talks about how the people, you know, in the classical music world are like, oh my God, you know, we're losing. You know, nobody's listening to classical music. Kind of, what are we going to do? Da, da, da. And he looks at the situation and goes, oh, I mean, all of these people love classical music. They just don't know it yet. And then his talk is about, he's teaching you how to listen to a piece. I think it's a Brahms piano concerto, but it's so, or maybe it might be Mozart, but he goes through, and it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant what he does, but he does make the case that, of course, anyone would love this music. They just don't know yet. But with hooping too, it's the thing of like, I think of myself, you know, before I saw Baxter, there were like hula hoops around, and I would, you know, there were like kids hula hooping, and there were big hoops for adults. But the only thing that I ever caught sight of was like awkward dads, you know, doing the big hoops. And one of my friends one time tried to get me to go over there. This is like, it's like heresy, you know. It was like on the Weaver Street line in Carbro. One of my friends is like, let's go over there and do those hula hoops. And I was like, hell no. With my glass of wine, you know. Are you kidding me? You know, I was, you know, on that side of the fence.
You just hadn't heard it yet.
I loved hooping, but I just didn't know it yet. Yeah, and it's really funny to think of how I saw it then. And it was just like, oh no. I'm not going to be like, you know, flailing around, you know, on the Weaver Street line. But then you get into it and you realize, oh my God, so many people. And then, you know, you meet so many people. So many people could get so much out of this. And then you meet all kinds of people who do.
Yeah.
And it just keeps on expanding.
And it's nice to share those stories. Mm-hmm. And everyone has a different story about how they discovered it.
Yes.
What it did for them. Or, you know, and how their opinions changed of the hoop and of their capabilities.
Yes.
I find that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So, and it's just like that wonderful little round childhood toy, you know.
I couldn't hula hoop as a kid. Or yo-yo.
Yo-yo.
Even worse at yo-yo. I couldn't do the lemon twist.
What's the lemon twist?
It's like when you... It's like the plastic lemon, and then there's a ring on one end, and then you skip over it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can you do that with a hoop now?
Oh, well, yes. I can do everything now that I couldn't do with a hula hoop before. I haven't tried the yo-yo, though. I really need to.
I didn't know that you needed to wax the string.
Well, I learned that just now when you told me.
Yeah, it helps it spin.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I would try the
yo-yo. Well, think about that.
I tried a lot harder at the yo-yo than I did at the hula hoop. But I just could not do it. My brother had several yo-yos. That was, I still just get a
well, now look
feeling
at what
when I think
yeah,
about
look
that.
What you've done with hoop. It's like maybe it's time to revisit. And like the yo-yos are part of like the whole contact, the juggling.
It's so true. So it's many like, of the, oh my God. Yo-yos are next. Yo-yos are next, y'all.
Okay. Yo-yo in the open space.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, this might be, we'll have a second entry as Anne explores yo-yoing with a hula hoop.
Yes.
Well, thank you. This has been,
it's another
this
kind
has
of
been
line
such
and
a, yes.
Sorry.
Oh my God. Okay, Jaguar Mary, mm-hmm. There's some more concepts out there for you.
We're ready. We're ready for the next, whatever. The next era.
Youping.
Yeah.
Youping. Well, Anne, thank you for talking and thank you for coming to Portland. It was
thank you.
Such
thank
an
you
honor so to have you here and thank
it's
you.
It's been awesome. Just such a homecoming and I love it here and I love it in Bend. I love the Pacific Northwest and I'll see you guys again.
And we love you.
I love you guys.
Thank you. So that was Anne. Don't you love her? I'm totally in love with her. And like she said, give yourself permission to dance. No matter what, just don't worry about what other people think. I think that's the beauty of being in a hoop. You have the opportunity to protect yourself with the hoop or open up to people with the hoop. It gives you permission to do whatever you want. That's just a truly beautiful thing. So the things that we talked about, I will have links to those on the blog, which is hoopanista.com. My website is hulahoopla.com. My hoop troop is the Spinnerets. So keep an eye on us for, all of that good stuff. And like I said, I'll have, links to Anne's website, her blog, her YouTube channel, a couple of the, videos that we mentioned, like her, their hoopless dancing, a really cool video she did on Inner Space, and her latest one that she did over at Baxter's Place. I also have a link to Jaguar Mary's YouTube channel, to the Hoop Path, and some links back to the TED Talks with Benjamin Zander that she spoke of. And then, of course, the Nooping video. So thank you for listening, and we have 4 more episodes to go before I'm hoping to make this kind of a for real deal. So once we get 10 episodes, I want to make a separate website and maybe ask for donations to keep it going so we can get better equipment for one. But thank you, Joel. Again, I will thank Joel every time for allowing me to use this audio device. Keep on hooping, people, and spread the hoop love any way you can. Share hoops out in the park. Just hoop and express yourself. Give yourself permission to dance. Thank you for joining. Bye-bye.